We feel it is proper at this time to commence our session by the singing of the Lord's Prayer. Our sister Lorraine Panucci is going to sing for us now the Lord's Prayer.
Lorraine, for the lovely rendition of the Lord's Prayer. This lecture, as some of you might suspect, is biblically as well historically oriented. And in the pursuit of further studies, there is a group that meets on Thursday evening at the Bill Memorial Library, Groton, and that's on Monument Street at the top of the hill of Fort Griswold. It's a good landmark for it. That's the Bill Memorial Library. Thursday night, a group of Bible students pursue further studies. And we are happy to let you know also that that group is an offshoot of an overflow of the radio program that's on every Sunday morning on WXLM 102.3 FM. And it is co-hosted by two colorful, pretty colorful people, Rick and Jonathan. And Fred is the man behind the board, as Rick announces every Sunday morning. It is not within the scope of this occasion to extol the virtues of Dr. Malley, but a brief introduction we feel is proper. Having known him for 50+ years. I was going to ask you your age, brother, but I don't want to get personal. Having known him for that long, the following philosophy alludes to his accomplishments. Quote, this philosophy, this quotation alludes to his philosophy. Do not follow where the path may lead, go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. I think he's done that very successfully. For one thing, as you notice, some of these, a couple of things are on the flyer. He is the author of 14 books. He is in the elite. He is in the elite class of professor emeritus at the University of Hartford, retired. He's retired now. But that's the level that he's reached, professor emeritus. And number three, should you have occasion to visit the University of Hartford, you will notice that there are two lecture halls honoring his tenure there. Two lecture halls honoring Dr. Malley's tenure there, known as Malley 1 and Malley 2. And lastly, Governor Rell has proclaimed September 14th as Paul Malley Day in Connecticut.
That's quite an honor. Incidentally,
in the spirit of his generosity, Dr. Malley would like to decree that on that day, every worker in Connecticut have the day off with pay. Let us return to the task at hand, and that is Dr. Malley's analysis of the Da Vinci Code. A question period will follow the lecture. And it is now my pleasure and distinct honor to present to you Dr. Paul Malley.
Thank you, Julius, and thank you, Lorene. I see so many familiar faces. Thank you for coming. Is this level of acoustics all right for everybody? Okay? But why did you come? What are your expectations as you react to the Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown? Are you just merely curious? Or are you wondering that there is a serious phenomena behind all of this? Now, I've considered this for some time, and I find that the reactions to the Da Vinci Code falls into four categories. Four. One, people have seen the movie, they have read the book, and they said, what a wonderful book it is. I enjoyed it. It was an intellectual experience. I love reading about mysteries. I love about covering up. So this people is saying, what's the fuss? Why are you so concerned, this first group? Why are you so concerned? Now, you know, the Da Vinci Code is based on two facets, the fiction and historic facts. And the line of demarcation between the two is very fuzzy. But the first group is saying, I enjoyed the book. Why are you making such a fuzzy, such a rebellious kind of criticism? The answer is, in the area of historic fact, Dan Brown claims that Jesus Christ has fathered a bloodline that's still walking planet Earth. Some are in France, some are in Italy, some are in England, some are all through the Earth. A bloodline. And so we ask these people if they enjoyed it. Do you enjoy fictitious use of manipulating facts? Now there is, we've got to, for our purposes, separate the story and separate historic facts. Now the story centers in on a Harvard professor, his name is Robert Langdon, and on a young lady named Sophie Nevin. And sometimes people who read this, or they don't realize it, but she's the one that's an offspring of Jesus. Perhaps you didn't get that in the book. The claim is that she is the bloodline of Jesus. So it's a story of this Jacques Sommer, who was murdered because he had this secret. The secret is that Jesus was married. The secret is that Jesus fathered a child with Mary Magdalene. The secret is that this child found its way eventually into France and eventually merged with royalty there and started a bloodline of Jesus on earth. Now, Braun claims that his facts are accurate and true. Braun claims for the past 2,000 years, everything we have learned as Christians is wrong. Braun claims that Jesus was fraudulent in his teachings. Braun claims that Jesus' record was a hoax. Braun claims that the Da Vinci Code will be more than a bestseller. Incidentally, it's selling about 100,000 books per week. Per week. And I think it's up to 60 million sold altogether. But translated into 44 languages, it has now become the greatest seller of historical novels in the history of the American book publishing business. Braun hopes that the Da Vinci Code will not only be a bestseller translated many languages, but it will change the perception, change the values, change the acceptance of Christ in our civilization, and think of Jesus as a man who did not die on the cross. He was taken down by Pilate and Joseph Arimathea, and he escaped and went to Egypt. There he died in Egypt, and the little child who was his offspring went on to France and started the bloodline. That's what Dan Braun wants to do. Now, I've given you a set of notes, and I'm going to refer to them as page one and page two. But I want to take the second group. That was the first group. They said, I enjoyed it. It was wonderful. Great. Why fuss a little bit about changing history? The second group hated the book. The second group hated the movie. The second group didn't like it, and they don't know why. There's something about that book that I don't like. Not realizing that it was working against not just Christ, but against Western civilization. Do you understand Western civilization as a big part of that is the component of Christianity? And Dan Brown is jolting the beliefs of Christianity. So this second group says, if Jesus did not die to give salvation for an afterlife, if there is no salvation, then there is no hope. There is no expectation. There is no future. Brown wants believing Christians to come away with a different mindset. A mindset with no hope for the future. Incidentally, quite often, Brown is challenged on his facts. He's challenged, and he's confronted with these facts, and what he does is to get out of these, well, it's a fictitious book. But keep in mind, there are two parts to the book. That which is fictitious, and we have no problem with people writing fictitiously. And then the other part is the historic fact, and he has not based it on historic fact. Now there's a third group. The third group who reacts very annoyed. This other group sees a bigger picture. There are 6 billion people on planet Earth. 2/3 of the 6 are not Christians. 1/3 are Christians. That is 2 million are Christians and 4 million are non-Christians. Well, this movie and this book is going throughout the whole earth. Non-Christians are getting a different picture of Jesus that we would have. And they're seeing Jesus in a different way. And so there is concern that non-Christians, people who have never learned about Jesus, people who have never known about Jesus, people who are completely estranged, all of a sudden they see him in this light and getting the wrong facts. I was just impressed recently where China has banned the book. A communist country has decided to remove the book and to remove the movie. This is a communist country. Now, have Christian countries done the same thing? The United States, France, Italy, Christian countries, Germany, England? No! But a communist country banned it. Because the Christians there in China are very strong and the government listens to them. I happen to know this personally because we're translating a book into Chinese now. We're under contract and I've made a contact with a book publisher who distributes books throughout all of China. And they're waiting for our translation to come in and so they can distribute it through China. So we are concerned. We're concerned that people will get the wrong impression about who is this Jesus. Let's take the last reactions. This is a group of people who have struggled between facts and fiction. Because our society is getting mixed up, and it's hard to find where one leaves off and another begins. This is the group that struggles between group, between truth and error. This is the group that struggles between reality and myth. This group struggles between authenticity and illusion. This group accepts the Bible as the truth. And incidentally, I'm going to be talking about two Bibles in this lecture. Two Bibles. One is called the canonized Bible, and the other is called the Gnostic Bible. Canonized and Gnostic. We are recipients of the canonized Bible. I doubt anybody here is a Gnostic believer. Raise your hand if you are. Okay. But these two Bibles are in contradiction. Dan Brown may be, with his literary skills, and he is a clever writer, put out a brainy thriller, a fascinating mystery, an intellectually satisfying story, but he will face accountability for trying to change the mindset of Christians everywhere. So what we're going to do in this lecture is we're going to try to give some evidence that Jesus was not married. And Jesus did not have a wife. We're going to try to give you some areas that he did not impregnate Mary Magdalene. And also the idea that Judas was not a traitor, he was a hero. Why was he a hero? Because Jesus asked him to betray him. Jesus asked Judas to bring him before, secretly, so that he could die according to the prophetic utterances of the Old Testament. So we're going to try to explain that. And we're going to take a look at Da Vinci himself. You know, what Da Vinci got to do with this? Da Vinci's a painter. He's a great painter. But what's he got to do with it? We're going to try to make a connection there. And is the Gnostic Bible replacing the canonized Bible? We're going to be talking about that as well. So let's turn to page 2. I use the word distortions in my heading. Distort means to deceive, means to deform, means to mislead, means to falsify, means to change the original. Now I see three sources of distortions. Mythology is one. You know, in the early period of human history, there was a lot of myths at that time. Lots of myths. In fact, when the sun rose in the morning and was there during the day and then settled down in the sunset of the evening, they saw that sun doing that every day. And they said, that must be a god. This is from mythology. So they called it the sun god. And this mythology has always been a source of myths and errors. Then, of course, fiction. Fiction. This is fantasy. Fiction is imagination. Fiction is a different reality. And I'm going to address the issue of why do people enjoy reading fiction? Why do people enjoy going to the movies? I'm really asking you. Why do you enjoy going to the movies? I'm going to try to answer that question later on. But for the time being, the American public just enjoys fiction. If you go into a bookstore today, you will notice that there's really two parts of that bookstore. There's the fiction and there's the nonfiction. Do you know that the fiction runs as much as 70% in the store? Nonfiction is only about 30%. Why do they have it that way? Because fiction books sell more. People like to read about history, historical fiction. They like to read about romance. They like to read about these things that are imaginary. And the third is lies. There are lies as sources, psychological lies, lies of omission, lies of commission, lies of exaggeration. So, the Da Vinci Code is a secret plan to deceive. And here's the plan. The plan is that Jesus never died, he just retired. He retired to Egypt, and there he died normally. And then his child was taken by Mary Magdalene over to France, and that child became a part of the bloodline of the royalty in France, which eventually the bloodline has propagated, and we have people on planet Earth, we don't know who they are, they're lost probably, just like the 10 lost tribes of Israel. We don't know where they are, but the claim is that they are there. So in the book, Da Vinci Code, Dan Brown asserts that Leonardo da Vinci, knew about this code, knew about Jesus having a bloodline. And so he painted in his paintings clues that will reveal this. Now we're going to analyze this Last Supper, and we'll analyze the Mona Lisa. But the claim is that he knew about it and built it into his paintings. We'll get to this in a few moments. Gnosticism was a religious movement that started in the second century. Gnosticism is a Greek word which means knowledge. Gnosticism speaks of humans as being a divine spark that needs to be restored. Gnosticism is the revealment of divine mysteries. Gnosticism was completely based on mythology. Gnosticism divided the Christian groups into two. Those that see God as one of justice and laws, and the other group as one of love and compassion. But Gnosticism is a key thing because that's what has infused into the gospel message, and people are confused. Let's take page four. If we take the view of mythology, mythology is often be thought of as fairy tales. Fairy tales. Legends and stories that we know are not true, but we consider them, like the sun. The sun comes up in the morning and goes down at night, and somebody said, well, that sun has got to be a god to do that. But the problem with mythology is an idea that came up that's strong with mythology, and it permeates paganism. It's the birth of paganism, that for every god, there's got to be a goddess. I want to repeat that point. For every god, there must be a goddess. Why? Because life comes from the interaction of a god and a goddess, male and female. And the feminine idea, as being strong, is one in which anybody who is a god must have a goddess. And this is the reason why Jesus, who was thought of as a god, had to have a goddess. Now here's the derivation of this. This is where it comes from. It comes from mythology, and it comes from the idea of paganism. That Jesus, if life is to come from Jesus, he must have a wife. So a myth is understood to be a true story in its ancient times, but from the outside it is seen as untrue. Let's take five. I try to give you two flows of information, how they are generated. You'll notice the top half comes from mythology, and the bottom half comes from the Torah. The top half, mythology, I made a list of the things that come from mythology. Gods, goddesses, knowledge, culture, social, heroes, sports, legends. You know, we are still part of the paganistic ideas. For example, you young ladies that have your wedding rings. That's not a Christian idea. That's a paganistic idea of exchanging rings and having a ring. Sports, football, basketball, soccer. These are not Christian ideas, these are paganistic ideas. The theater, which we put as the movies, part of the movies, and part of the comedies and so on, they too. Thank you, Julius. You knew I would need this. We have paganistic things still in our civilization. So, the Gnostics, which were a movement in the second century, took much of the paganistic ideas with them. And the one I want to center in is that first, every god must have a goddess. And every individual must have a wife in order to have life. You see, that was the central theme. And this explains why, then, the move to put Mary Magdalene as a wife of Jesus. Now, the Torah, which is another stream of ideas, the Torah believed in one God, believed in laws and wisdom and sin and Sabbath and prayer, festivals and so forth. It produced a Judaism, the Jewish religion, and it broke up into two areas, the Jews as well as the Pharisees. Christianity from Jesus then became infected or influenced by the Da Vinci Code or by the Gnostics. Incidentally, if you talk to anybody who is paganistic and ask them their view of Christianity, they will say that the indictment of Christianity is three areas. First, Christianity is atheistic. Atheistic? Yes, because you know how many gods the pagans have? 300,000 gods. 300,000 gods by name, paganism has. And they turn to the Christians and say, how many gods do you have? We have only one God. And because of that, they see that as atheism. Second, the pagans indict Christians because they think that they're cannibalistic. They eat flesh and drink blood. But remember in Matthew, the 26th chapter, when our Lord Jesus said, take, eat, this is my flesh, and take, drink, this is my blood. They take that literally, not symbolically. They take that literally. And so therefore they say, well, Christians are cannibalistic. So that's the second indictment. The third indictment, they say the Christians have incest. Why? Because they stay together. They don't mingle in with anybody. They are a separate group, and they keep away from the rest. So these two areas are the major areas which then came into the flow that Jesus had to have a wife because he was a God. And the second is that he didn't die, but started the bloodline. Six. I've given you a timeline here as to when things start and so forth, and where things began. We have two Bibles. We have the canonized Bible and the Gnostic Bible. Now, the canonized Bible has four Gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Three of them are eyewitnesses to the Christ. Three are eyewitnesses. Luke was not an eyewitness. Incidentally, Luke is the only Gentile in the canonized Bible. The only. The others are all Jews. All the books of the Bible are written by the Jews. Jesus was a Jew. The apostles were Jews. The special messengers were Jews. All of the disciples were Jews. And it wasn't until the apostle Paul began to make his preaching into the Gentiles that things changed. But I want you to know that the canonized Bible was 180 years before the Gnostic Bible. 180 years. Now, you just think about 180 years, you could see much could come in and start changing things. So, if you went into a bookstore and asked for the Gnostic Bible, you won't find it, because there's no such thing as a Gnostic Bible. But there is a Hammadi Bible. That is a Bible which has 80 Gospels. 80 of them, beginning with the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of John, the Gospel of James, the Gospel of Judas.
Write my bag over there. No.
Is it over there? They got 80 Gospels, but these are not eyewitnesses.
Thank you.
I have here the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. These are very difficult to find, by the way. This is the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. It would suggest that Mary Magdalene wrote this. She did not. It was written somewhere around 200 AD, long after Mary Magdalene had died. But this is the Gospel. So if you go into a bookstore and ask for the Hammadi Gospels, you might find it. Definitely if you go into a library, you'll find it, you see. But here is the Gospel according to Mary Magdalene. Now, I have analyzed this book from cover to cover. Cover to cover. Not one single place does it mention that she was the wife of Jesus. So therefore, you've got to think this idea that Jesus had a wife came in later on. Came in later on. I think Dan Brown picked it up from Bagent. From Bagent. B-A-I-G-E-N-T. We'll get into that in a few moments. But Bagent wrote a book called The Holy Blood and Holy Grail. It was Bagent that brought out the idea that Mary Magdalene was the wife of Jesus. But in these original books, they have not. Now, I'm not going to take time to go through this book, but I have it up here if anybody wants to see it. And if in the question period you have a question about this, I'll be very happy to answer it. So in this timeline, here are the important things you must know. First, the canonized Bible was written between 50 and 100 AD and finalized, that is, completely finalized and accepted, in 395 AD. The canonized has four Gospels. Three of them are eyewitnesses, that is, they were contemporary with Jesus. The third point is that there's a 125-year gap between the last book of the canonized Bible and the beginning of the Gnostic Bible. Four, that this period up to Constantine, which is 325 AD, was a period of great formulation of the Bible. This was the period in which different claims were considered, and we finally finalized it in 395. The Gnostic Bibles were written, but they were not written by the individual. If I said the Gospel of Judas, Judas didn't write that. Somebody else wrote it for him. And if I say the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, Mary Magdalene didn't write that, but rather somebody else wrote it for her. Or if I say the Gospel of Andrew, he didn't write it, somebody else wrote it for him. And so this was the kind of witnesses that made the claims about the bloodline. All right, let's talk about Bagehot, page 7. Incidentally, I made pictures of the covers of these books so that if any of you wanted to pick up the books and read them for yourself, you can. Bagehot was the one who wrote the book Holy Blood and Holy Grail. He wrote that book. It was a bestseller at the time. And in that book, he was the one who came out with the idea that there was no cup at the Last Supper. There was no grail. That the grail was Mary Magdalene. She was the one, because when Jesus says, "Take, drink, this is my blood," he was referring to Mary Magdalene. Now we'll get back when we get to the picture to show that there was no cup on the Last Supper. Everybody had their own cups. We'll get back to that in a minute. But Bagehot was the one that claimed that Pilate and his friends took Jesus from the crucifixion. He was the one that claimed that the origin of Christianity is wrong. Bagehot claims that Jesus went to Egypt with his pregnant wife. Bagehot was the one that claimed only a few ideas that was the turning point in Christianity. Incidentally, Bagehot sued recently Dan Brown. Dan Brown was sued in England, and the suit was rejected because ideas are not suable. And Bagehot was also the one that said that Jesus did not exist. So on page 8, I shared with you sources that confirm the existence of Jesus and his crucifixion. You'll notice that the documents of Jewish writers, this was Josephus. Josephus mentioned him. He was a secular Jew. He mentioned about Jesus. Then Tacitus and the Roman writers, and Pliny, both of them described about this man, Jesus. Pilate even mentioned that to Caesar about Jesus, archaeological findings. And so I made a list there of all the areas that seem to support the idea that Jesus did actually exist. Page 9. Jesus is often called the Word of God. Now here, I went through the canonized Bible, book by book, to find where each book indicates metaphorically where Jesus is located. And you have that list right in front of you. I wanted to share that with you. Number 10. The major focus of the Da Vinci Code is that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene, and that Jesus did not die on the cross. He escaped. It implies Christianity, as we know it, is a lie. It implies paganism is having a comeback. It implies the afterlife that you're looking forward to does not exist. Page 11. Let me now give you 8 reasons that seem to give evidence that Jesus was not married. First, there's not a single scripture in the canonized Bible that says Jesus was married to Mary. Not one single scripture. And several scriptures that tend to imply that he wasn't. For example, when Mary was at the tomb and she asked the guard, spoke to the person there and said, "Where did they take my Lord?" Now, if she was married to him, she would have said, "Where did they take my husband?" You see. But where did they take my Lord? And the second, there is a notion that Dan Brown brings out, and that is most Jewish men get married. They're expected to be married. But we find a lot of men who were God-oriented were not married. For example, Elijah and Elisha, they weren't married. John the Baptist was not married. The Apostle Paul was not married. And so there were people who were not married as an exception to this rule that all Jewish men were married. The second evidence. The Gnostics claim this after 100 years later. That's a big gap of time. Paganism was strong, and that idea of gods and goddesses still came in and still affected the early Christian church. Number 3, on the cross, he never called his mother, mother. He always called her woman. And you know, that's a topic that one can discuss for a whole hour about why he did that. But he never referred to that, indicating that there was a big gap between his humanism and the normal people in the air. He was a special, in fact, the claim was that he was the Son of God. He never denied it. He even said, "Yes, I am." The fourth is the scriptures cite father, mother, brothers, and sisters. This is in Matthew 13, 54 to 58. It mentions his entire family, but never mentions a wife. And you would think, as this scripture is identifying his family, there would be a wife in there. And number 5, the Dead Sea Scrolls are cited that the Messiah was to be in the scene, and the scene was to be single and celibate. Now, these are Dead Sea Scrolls that have been recently uncovered, and the Essenes claimed that they were the individuals who were celibate at that time, which didn't have wine. Incidentally, the Essenes is a very special group. They got kicked out of Jerusalem. Why? Because they read Isaiah and they saw 2 types of messiahs. They saw a messiah who was a suffering servant, and they saw a messiah who was a reigning king. And they says there must be 2 messiahs. When they said that to the Pharisees, they got thrown out of Jerusalem, and they were down in the area of the Dead Sea Scrolls, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. And the Essenes weren't spiritual enough to recognize that the Messiah was one person with 2 comings. One person with 2 comings. Okay, number 6. The Apostle Paul knew nothing of Jesus' wife. He met Jesus on the road to Damascus. That's Acts 9, 4 to 5. Nothing is ever mentioned in any of his works that Jesus had a wife. And then the seventh one is that one day Jesus is to be married to his church. This is found in Revelation 19, 7 and 9. And so he was really not a bigamist. He wasn't marrying people. He was only true to the marriage to his church. It was Badgett and Brown that brought out the idea that he had a wife. Let's take 12. Now, Leonardo da Vinci, born in Italy, was an Italian. But I want you to know that da Vinci is not his last name. Vinci is a town outside of Florence. So when you say da Vinci, it means Leonardo from the town of Vinci. And Leonardo is regarded as a genius because he had so many different ideas. He was a psychologist, he was an engineer, he was very creative, and of course he was a painter. Leonardo probably was given the credit for starting the Renaissance. The Renaissance was a period of time in which there was an open rebellion about all of the restrictions at the time. Rebellion against the church, a rebellion against the military dukes, because Italy at that time was a series of states. There were all kinds of states. There was the Florentine state, there was the Naples state, there was the state of Sicily, there was the state of Milan, and France, and the Ottoman Empire were invading these states. So Leonardo was born as an illegitimate child with a peasant woman, and the father took him in and raised him. But he always had that stigma of being an illegitimate child. And as a result, he never had the privilege of a real mother to help. You had the stepmother who was of a different class. But I think what's important is Leonardo was the beginning of the Renaissance period in Italy, which then became the open change. And in 20 years, it sparked the idea from Martin Luther, who started the Reformation. The Reformation started when the Renaissance period was rolling. Let's take a look at 13. I'm keeping my eye on the clock because we can spend a lot of time on this. But 13. The scriptures say, now this, I apologize for the quality of this picture, but this is the Last Supper. Leonardo painted this in Milan. It was a big painting, 30 feet long and 14 feet high. And Leonardo took a lot of liberties about this. Leonardo made some changes about what the historic facts are. Let me go through this. I'll let you read the specifics. But basically, you will note that Jesus put out his hands like this. He painted, Leonardo painted Jesus with his hands like this, suggesting that this is all there is. This is it. This is complete. And it isn't. The Last Supper was just one event of many events. But Leonardo was to say this was the big thing. The second, if you look at where one is, that's supposed to be the picture of Judas. He put a knife in the hands of Judas. A knife, suggesting that Judas was about to knife somebody. Well, this is not according to the Bible. The Bible doesn't have Judas with a knife. But he put a knife into Judas's hand. The third, he painted, Leonardo painted John, who was to the right of Jesus, painted him feminine. painted him a woman. And so introduced the idea that Mary Magdalene was sitting there at the Last Supper. But in Jewish cultures, women were not allowed to eat at the same time. In fact, in Jewish culture, women were not even allowed to go into the sanctuary. Now, my wife and I, we were in Jerusalem for 7 years, and we always used to go to the great synagogue. And as we would go in, Mary had to go up to the balcony. They had to go up to the balcony where the men came in on the regular sanctuary. So if you ask, where are the women? They're up in the balcony. They weren't allowed to be in there. And so that's another false thing that Leonardo didn't know, being an Italian. He didn't know that. He thought women could eat at the same time, so he painted that in. That's an error, you see. Now, who was that supposed to have been? That's supposed to have been John. John was next to him. But you notice Leonardo painted her as a female. The second man on the right, if you don't know who that is, he painted himself in that. That's Leonardo. And I'll give you a better picture of him a little later on. So, if you look at the table, you will not see a cup. You will not see a cup, but you'll see that each one has a cup. Everybody had a cup. This is not scriptural. This is not what the Bible says. The Bible says that there was one cup, and he says, take, eat. And Jesus says, take, drink. And they shared, each one, with that. Okay, let's take 14. This is a self-portrait of Leonardo. You won't find this portrait in any of the books that I have cited here. This is an unusual portrait that I managed to find. Now, did he really look like this, or was he creating a joke? I don't know. He was a man of about 60 years old. But he was a Catholic, and he believed in the Catholic Church, but he had something against the priests. He didn't like the priests. He thought they were wealthy. He thought they had more control. In those days, they were selling indulgences. And so Leonardo painted himself into that. And the claim by Dan Brown is that the Mona Lisa is supposed to be Mary Magdalene. Now, how would Leonardo know what Mary Magdalene looked like? But you have to admit that the Mona Lisa is a wonderful painting. Great painting. But it's false to think that it was Mary Magdalene. How would he know that? You know, it's been 1,500 years since Mary Magdalene and Leonardo. Now, it's rather interesting. We were in Paris for some time. And Mary and I, we would go to the Louvre where the actual painting is. It's a beautiful painting, and they've got guards, they've got police all around that, by the way, because it's such a valuable painting. And one of the things I noticed about this painting is it was against the wall, and as you go on one side and look at the painting, you would say that she's looking right at me on the right side. And then if you go around to the middle, you say, she's still looking at me. If you go over to the left side, extreme left, she's still looking. This was my experience with the Mona Lisa. Those eyes, the way he painted those eyes, no matter where you were, those eyes followed you. I think Don Pontius would know all about that. So, the Mona Lisa and the Last Supper painting was supposed to be Dan Brown's Da Vinci point that Leonardo knew that Jesus was married, and then he built that into the painting. Frankly, I don't see it. I say it not as Da Vinci code, but Dan Brown's code. Let's move to 15. The Gospel of Judas. And we already said, Bagent was the one who introduced the idea that Judas was a hero and not a traitor. Why? Because Jesus asked Judas to go to the priest and betray him. Let's go to 16. Let me give you the evidences and the scriptures. In Mark, it was listed, Judas was listed as one of the 12. And in Luke 6:16, Judas was called a traitor. In John 12:3-5, Judas criticized Mary Bethany for the perfume. Remember the perfume? Then in John 13:29, Judas was the treasurer of the group. And there was an indication by Jesus himself that he was stealing from the treasury. And in John 13:21, Judas was identified as the betrayer. Jesus did point to him as the betrayer. And Matthew 26, Judas was known as the deceitful. And in Mark 14, betrays Jesus with a kiss. And in John 18:27, Judas was possessed by Satan. In John 6:70-71, Judas was controlled by the devil. And then finally in Matthew 26:24, Jesus said of Judas, it would be better if he were not born. Does that sound like a hero? Constantine is brought to the Da Vinci Code because Dan Brown said he started Christianity. He was the founder of Christianity. Well, this is false. He wasn't the founder. Neither was the Apostle Paul the founder of Christianity. There's only one person who was the founder of Christianity, and that was Christ himself. No other identification would suffice. But Constantine is brought in because Constantine had a debate. They were talking about the nature of Jesus. Was Jesus a god or was he human? And there was a debate between Arius and Athanasius. Both of these bishops, Athanasia and Arius, believed in the one God. But one said he was divine, and then he died, and then became divine again. The other one said he was born human first, and then became divine. What is about the Constantine issue is rather interesting, is that 1,000 bishops were invited by Constantine to come to Nicaea in 325 AD and to have a discussion and to vote. Was Jesus divine before he died or was he divine afterwards? What's rather interesting, 318 bishops went. But I was curious, 1,000 were invited, why didn't the remnant the difference between that. That is, over 600. 600 bishops did not go. Why didn't they go? Because they knew what was the issue and they knew what they wanted them to. It was a fixed, it was a prearranged kind of vote. So that what Constantine wanted to do was to have Christianity and paganism merge. And so we could make a big argument about that. Okay, finally, how mistakes are made. This is my last item, and why fiction is read. When you have languages, when you're changing languages, remember the original Bible was written in the Hebrew and in the Aramaic. So from that, it was translated into the Greek and the Greek Septuagint. Then the third, it was translated into the Latin Vulgate, into Syriac, and the Coptic. And then the fourth is in English. There's four different translations. So there could be errors coming out with these translations. I'll never forget in Tokyo one time I was giving a public lecture. And I said to the translator, I said, I will give you 10 words for 10 seconds and then you translate. And those are the bites we would have. Well, I would do it in 10 seconds. She would take a minute and a minute and a half. I says, how come? She says, because we haven't got the equivalent word. And I have to explain it, you see. So there's errors from the languages. There's errors from opinions and mixed with facts. Somebody had made the point that there's only 1% of history that's ever recorded. Only 1%. And it's recorded with the prejudices and so forth. So why do we read fiction? Why do we go to the movies? Why do we go into imaginative situations? Let me give you some reasons. Page 18. We want to live differently or a different reality with no commitments. That is, I'd like to read about the Civil War and I don't want to be there. But I want to read about it. Or I want to read about this romance novel. Oh, that's kind of nice. But I can come out of it, you see. So as a rule, we like to live, the word is vicariously. We want to live vicariously. We want to live other people's lives. But we don't want the commitment of those lives. The second is escapism. This is where we want to get away from our own lives and escape to something that we enjoy. And so it becomes a cycle of escapism. Number three, we want to see things from other people's viewpoints. Number four, we want to continue to live in a schizophrenic life. Now this is a statistic that's interesting, but as much as 20% of the American public have schizophrenic tendencies. Now you know what a schizophrenic is? A schizophrenic is one who withdraws from reality into a different kind of a situation. And finally, we do have the power of resilience, and so moving into different areas allows us to exercise that resilience. Let me conclude. Does Christianity still matter from how it was set up by the founder? I answer, yes, it does matter. Does it matter that the errors fostered by the Da Vinci Code is changing Christianity? Are we concerned? Yes, I'm concerned. Does it matter that we Christians defend the faith as originally given to the apostles? Yes, it does matter that we defend the faith as it was given to the apostles. Yes, if if a new popular theology is in the making of Christianity, it will lead to a different kind of Christianity that we have all known from the founder. I will leave with two scriptures, Revelation 22, 18 and 19. For I testify unto every man that heareth the words of the prophecy of this book. If any man shall add unto these things, God shall add unto him the plagues that are written in this book. And 18, and if any man shall take away from the words of this book, God shall take away his part from the tree of life. These are the last two scriptures in the canonized Bible. And with that, thank you for your attention. I appreciate it. Now I promise you some questions. If you want to take up some questions and some discussions, let's do that. Anybody got a question? Go ahead. Try to repeat what she said. Some of you may not have heard that. Does it really matter whether Jesus was married or not married? That was your question. Yeah. Okay. Basically, I said originally that it does matter. A fact is a truth. If you then begin to remove facts, you remove truth. And to say that he did get married, and to say that he fathered a child, and to say that there are people who are part of that bloodline, is to introduce something that's false. You said it didn't matter to you one way or another. No. Any other questions? Okay, say a little loud so we can all hear you. Okay, this young lady is saying that it does matter, especially with the young people. Because they, you know, telling them what the truth is, after a while it becomes unreal. You know, a schizophrenic doesn't know what's real and what's false. But I would add to this more than that. The worldview, there are people who have never heard of Jesus, never learned of Jesus, never studied Jesus. And if we portray him this way, they get the wrong information. And so it does matter. Any other questions? Speak up so we can hear. Okay. I think you're right. The teachings is very basic. And Dan Brown is saying that the teachings that Jesus made was fraudulent. Fraudulent. And the most important teaching that Jesus had was a hope for salvation of an afterlife. Take that teaching away. What does Christianity have? Question? Okay, you're saying, how do we know that the four Gospels that comprise the canonized Bible are accurate? Right? Well, you know how many translations there are in existence? There's 200. 200 translations, not versions, In the versions, there are thousands. Like the Scofield is a version based on the King James translation. There are errors. There are errors. In the King James Bible, there is at least 20,000 errors that people have discovered. So, you know, for myself, I have practically all of the translations. And so when I go to study any particular part, I check with all the translations. And the key that gives me the truth is that the Bible must harmonize. If something does not harmonize, then I know something is wrong. But the harmony and the consistency of all the various books, including the Gospel, must be there. Questions? You're a little louder. Is it true, first, the Gospel of Philip? Okay, now I got the question. The answer is, Philip did not write it. Somebody else wrote it for him. And it was 200 years later, just like this book here. And if you would like to see this, I'll have this book up here. This book is the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. Nothing in here about being married. But this book was not written by Mary Magdalene. But yet, somebody used her name.
Another question. One of the staples of that real legend is Dan Brown presents. And I think Dan Brown wrote a novel. I don't know what it is. But one of the staples of that theory is about the grail is
Well, you know, the Knights, the Templar Knights is a true organization. Opus Dei is a true organization. You know, Knights of Columbus is another organization. These organizations are true and they exist. Okay? But over the years, they have changed in their format. Now, Leonardo was a member of the Knights, the Templar Knights. He was a member of that organization. But it's not what Dan Brown's saying. He introduced ideas of his own and not with Leonardo. Leonardo was, he's an interesting man from a religious standpoint. He really was against the church. He was a member of the Catholic Church, but he was against the Catholic Church. And I think it's all part of this life that he led as an illegitimate son. He never had opportunities, and he saw things with the priesthood that they were rich, they had lots of things to do, and he didn't have those things. And so he went against it. And as a result, the Renaissance period began to start in Italy. Question? Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay. The question that she's making a statement, isn't it possible that the church could be covering up something and covering up? The answer is yes. It could be covering up. I mean, there are a lot of other areas we could talk about, but in this area here, It can't be covering it up because we know what to canonize the original Bible was for or how it came out. We have a copy of that. And it was not written by the church. It was written by the four gospel writers and the Apostle Paul and John with the revelation. Question? Well, you've been a very good... Go ahead.
My faith reinforced the idea of Jesus' marriage. I appreciated your thoughts on the fact that he had a mission, and some of the most special people used by God, they did not marry. I like the point you made there, that Jesus' mission was so special, so important, that that was why he chose not to marry. And then he talks about his mystical wife. You know, the bride of Christ is a symbol of his church. And while I'm up here, I don't know, did I mention the radio program, Sunday morning, from 6 to 8? Did you mention the time? Okay, Jonathan, and read Sunday morning. And Thursday night, at the Bill Memorial Library, I don't know, mention 7:30. Or anybody that's interested in pursuing further studies on this, we have a nice group.
Good. Thank you for coming. We appreciate it, and drive home safely.